For 200 years, treasure hunters have traveled to a small community in Virginia, hoping to find one of the largest buried treasures in America. Legend says Thomas Jefferson Beale found the treasure out west, brought it to Virginia, buried it, and left behind three ciphers that will lead you to it. But to find the treasure, you have to do what amateur and professional cryptanalysts haven't been able to do: unlock the code. This is the mystery of the lost treasure of the Beale ciphers. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. The legend and mystery surrounding the Beale cipher and the Beale treasure has both inspired and frustrated treasure hunters for two centuries. Hunters from across the United States and many other countries have traveled to a small community of Montvale, just north of Roanoke and west of Lynchburg, Virginia, all in the hopes of unearthing Beale's buried treasure of silver, gold, and jewels. It was in Virginia, in early 1817, a group of Virginians organized a hunting party that would travel to the Missouri Territory. The group consisted of 30 men, all unidentified except for one, Thomas Jefferson Beale. Beale was elected to serve as the trail captain. In April 1817, Beale and the men departed Virginia to hunt buffalo, grizzlies, and other animals in the West. When the group was just north of Santa Fe, they set up camp in a small ravine. Within days, Beale claimed that the group discovered gold and silver. The men worked in the area for the next 18 months, mining huge amounts of the treasure. That find led to paranoia on Beale's part. He said he would look over his shoulder and wonder when the group would be attacked. After all, they were in hostile territory. Beale decided that the silver and gold should be sent to Virginia under his charge and then buried in a secure location that would be known only to Beale and to his team. In the summer of 1819, the first Beale Party shipment of gold and silver from New Mexico arrived in Virginia, and by November, the shipment was buried about 4 miles outside of a community known as Montvale in Bedford County, Virginia. With winter setting in, Thomas Jefferson Beale checked into the Washington Hotel in Lynchburg in January of 1820. Here, Beale was said to have befriended the owners of the hotel, Robert Morris, and his wife, Sarah. In March 1820, Thomas Jefferson Beale and his team departed Lynchburg and traveled back to New Mexico to arrange the second Beale Party shipment of gold and silver to Virginia. To reduce the weight, Beale traded some of the gold and silver for jewels ahead of his return to Lynchburg. By December of 1821, the shipment was in Virginia and buried at the same location as the first. With winter once again setting in, Beale returned to the Washington Hotel in Lynchburg. He checked in January 4th, 1822, and the following day, January 5th, he wrote a letter to the owner of the hotel, Robert Morris, a letter Morris wouldn't see for decades. As Thomas Jefferson Beale prepared to leave the Washington Hotel in late March of 1822, he gave Robert Morris a strongbox that he said contained letters of great importance and ciphers that would lead to a buried treasure. Beale instructed Morris that if he had not heard from him within 10 years, Morris would receive a letter with the cipher key and he was to open the box. Morris agreed and kept his word. By spring of 1832, he hadn't heard from Thomas Jefferson Beale, didn't know if the man was even alive, but Morris hadn't received an additional letter with the key to the ciphers Beale said were locked inside the box. so Morris left the box unopened until the spring of 1845. It was clear to Robert Morris that Thomas Jefferson Beale wasn't coming back. Morris cracked open the box and found a note written by Beale along with three sheets full of numbers. The note revealed details from Beale, the treasure that had been discovered, and the agreement amongst the members of the Beale party. They had agreed that Beale would create ciphers as a map to get to the vault where the treasure had been buried. Then Beale was to pick one person he trusted to honor the men if anything should happen to them, a man who would ensure the relatives of the members of the Beale party would receive their share if the men never made it back. Morris was instructed by Beale's letter to divide the treasure in 31 equal parts, with one part for him and the remaining to be distributed to the men named in the third cipher. The mentions of ciphers and secret codes in 1845, it didn't sound strange to Robert Morris. Secret messages were common, and many men who were veterans of the War of 1812 and the Revolutionary War had ciphering skills. Even if Morris wasn't a veteran, he wouldn't be shocked to hear of ciphers. He was surprised by the weight of the burden he felt. Robert Morris felt responsible for finding the treasure and passing it on to the relatives of the members of the Beale party. He assumed by now that all of the men had perished. Otherwise, one of them would have come to him over the past 23 years. But Morris faced many obstacles in his journey to try to solve the ciphers. First and foremost was the key that never arrived. Beale told him it would come via letter, but if a letter had been sent, it never got to Morris. This left Robert Morris with one choice: try to unscramble the ciphers on his own. That task became an obsession for him. He attempted to solve the ciphers for the next 20 years. By 1862, Morris was 84 years old, and he knew he was running out of time. But he also knew he needed to share his secret and entrust the Beale ciphers to someone else who could honor Beale's wishes. Robert Morris decided to share his secret with his friend, James B. Ward. Morris entrusted the box containing Beale's letters to Ward, along with those ciphers, which were substitution ciphers, where you counted the words and letters in a key text in order to find each of the letters in the cipher. Robert Morris died in 1863, but James Ward continued working on the mystery of the ciphers and eventually solved one of them. He determined this particular cipher was based on a consecutive numbering of all 1,322 words of the Declaration of Independence. The cipher Ward solved revealed details of the exact treasure that was buried by Thomas Jefferson Beale. Of the three ciphers Beale left behind, the first and third ciphers remain unsolved. The second cipher was the one solved by Ward. The remaining two didn't have the same key. When translated, the second cipher solved by Ward read as follows: I have deposited in the county of Bedford, about 4 miles from Buford's, in an excavation or vault, 6 feet below the surface of the ground, the following articles belonging jointly to the party whose names are given in number 3. The first deposit consisted of 1,014 pounds of gold and 3,812 pounds of silver, deposited November 1819. The second was made December 1821 and consisted of 1,907 pounds of gold and 1,288 pounds of silver. Also jewels obtained in St. Louis in exchange for silver to save transportation and valued at $13,000. The above is securely packed in iron pots with iron covers. The vault is roughly lined with stone and the vessels rest on solid stone and are covered with others. Paper number 1 describes the exact locality of the vault so that no difficulty will be had in finding it. Now, this meant that somewhere in the Virginia mountains, the Beale party had buried a modern-day equivalent of between $50 to $60 million worth of treasure. This knowledge drove James Ward to invest more and more of his time analyzing and trying to decode ciphers 1 and 3. Ward continued his work on the ciphers until 1885, when he decided it was time to ask for help. In 1885, James Ward ordered a pamphlet to be printed and sold at the Virginia Print Job in Lynchburg. The important detail the pamphlet did not include was the name James Ward, because he didn't want people showing up on his property demanding more information or potentially harming him while in a frenzy to find the treasure. Ward had unburdened himself of the secret of the Beale treasure by publishing everything he knew. Anyone wishing to view the ciphers and read about the treasure paid 50 cents for the Beale pamphlet. As expected, the pamphlet and talk about it led to treasure fever. Those who obtained a copy attempted to decode the ciphers. Some thought they had done it, packed up their horses and supplies, and headed into Bedford County to begin digging for their dreams. Still, the location of the treasure and the names of the men who would know where it was buried remained locked within the ciphers. In the summer of 1897, brothers Clayton and George Hart obtained copies of the Beale papers. The obsession that had once been in the hands of Robert Morris and James Ward was now in the hands of the Hart brothers. They used every means accessible to them, but by 1912, Clayton Hart gave up. By 1952, George Hart lost hope that the ciphers could be solved. Another Beale Papers fan was Hiram Herbert Jr., who obtained a copy of the pamphlet in 1923 and committed to the obsession of those ciphers, working on solving them well into the 1970s. To no avail. All those years, and nothing to show for his time and efforts. Would anyone attempting to decode this mystery be able to find answers? Was there even treasure hidden in rural Virginia? Or had people fallen for an elaborate hoax? Was Thomas Jefferson Beale even a real person? Thomas Beale's friend, Robert Morris, once described Beale as a rugged but handsome-looking man, sharing a detailed description of Beale as follows. About 6 feet tall, with jet black eyes and hair of the same color, but his distinguishing feature was a dark and swarthy complexion, as if much exposure to the sun and weather had thoroughly tanned and discolored him. This, however, did not detract from his appearance, and I thought him the handsomest man I had ever seen. Beale was extremely popular with everyone, particularly the ladies. But Robert Morris did make note of the fact that Beale never spoke about his background or a family. Amateur and professional researchers have tried to find records of the existence of a Thomas Jefferson Beale who matched the description and timeline in the Beale papers, but their efforts have come up short due to a lack of information and a lack of complete census records from the 1810 and 1820 census. In 1810 and 1820, there are a few men named Thomas Beale who appear in the census and have connections to Virginia, or listed Virginia as their home state. But there's been no definitive proof that any of these men would be the same Thomas Beale of Beale Cipher's fame. Those who doubt the story also point to a few discrepancies. Beale's story begins with a trip west in 1817, in which he and his hunting party discovered gold and silver. But there's no record of precious metals discovered in the Santa Fe region until almost 30 years after Beale's alleged western adventure. And the letters from Thomas Beale that were in the box Robert Morris opened in 1845 also call the story into question. In 1982, a linguist compared Beale's letters to the writings of the Beale Papers pamphlet that had an anonymous author at the time and found that both used, and I'm quoting here, reflexive pronouns incorrectly, copied the prose of the King James Bible, and overused negative passive constructions such as never to be realized and never be told. The linguists concluded that there were such striking similarities in the James Ward and Thomas Beale writings that one author was responsible for both. The logical question here is that if one man wrote both the letters and the pamphlet, and Thomas Beale didn't exist, who wrote the letters, who wrote the pamphlet, and who created the ciphers? There was a man who many believed could have been the author, a famous writer who was known to have a very keen interest in ciphers, Edgar Allan Poe. To this day, some people believe Poe is connected to the Beale ciphers. Poe notoriously printed requests in a Philadelphia newspaper asking people to submit ciphers to him so he could solve them. But the Poe theory falls apart when you look at the timeline. Poe died in 1849. The Beale papers weren't published until 1885. For some, realizing things didn't completely add up led to their hope of the treasure story being real fading away. They set aside their dream of finding the Beale treasure and concluded that this may have been some sort of sick trick to get them to buy copies of the Beale papers and put money into the hands of a man who created a great hoax. If it is a hoax, there are many more theories as to who is behind it. First and foremost, James B. Ward. Remember, he had planned to make 50 cents off of each Beale papers pamphlet he sold. But Ward's family stand behind him to this day, saying they believe this story as much as any pastor believes the words written in the Bible. And Ward never made a dime off those pamphlets. There was a warehouse fire where the pamphlets had been stored after they were printed in 1885. Very few copies survived the fire. When Ward died, he was a pauper, a man who had lost everything in his own attempt to find the answers to the mystery of the Beale ciphers. Some Beale enthusiasts have claimed that the treasure is real, but it was long ago discovered and taken, and the Beale papers were printed to deflect attention from those who had found the treasure. Even if the legend is true, maybe that's how the men who buried the treasure needed this to play out. Maybe that's why Robert Morris never heard from Beale or any of the men in the Beale party after 1822, and why Morris never received a letter with a key to the ciphers. Maybe the Beale party returned to Virginia to reclaim their treasure and set off to spend it and live out the rest of their life in a luxurious fashion, possibly even out of the country. And there's the always popular theory related to any potential hoax in America: the government is connected. Some Beale treasure hunters believe the treasure was there, waiting to be found, until an NSA task force, disguised as U.S. Forest Service workers, found the treasure and took it. You may hear the words Beale enthusiast and think of, well, eccentric folks who search for answers to this mystery. But in the years since the Beale ciphers became public knowledge, enthusiasts have ranged from professional cryptanalysts to amateur treasure hunters. Herbert Yardley launched the U.S. Cipher Bureau at the end of World War I and was fascinated by Beale ciphers. That fascination was something he had in common with Colonel William Friedman, a renowned codebreaker of the early 20th century. Friedman used the Beale ciphers in his training programs. Carl Hammer, a pioneer of computerized codebreaking, also saw the Beale ciphers as tools, a perfect way to challenge the greatest minds in the country. Hammer viewed them as an incredible resource in training and even leading the way in his own computer research. In 1969, Hammer organized what would be known as the Beale Cipher Association. He hoped to attract the best minds in the world to tackle the ciphers. The club grew to about 200 members, including some pretty big names within government and intelligence. Members like Carl Nelson Jr., who helped the CIA intercept communist signals in a secret tunnel under Berlin. But by the 1990s, interest in the Beale Cipher Association waned, and it was retired. Some of those great minds who were members of the Beale Cipher Association did point out that solving the ciphers would come down to finding the right document to unlock them. One codebreaker said that even a second grader could break those ciphers if the child had found the right document. Amateurs and professionals who have studied the ciphers have used just about every document you can think of to try to unlock the secrets Beale allegedly left behind. The U.S. Constitution, Magna Carta, the Louisiana Purchase, Shakespeare's works, even turning to the Bible to see if the Lord's Prayer, the Songs of Solomon, or the Book of Psalms could be the key. But time and time again, they came up empty-handed. But for true Beale enthusiasts, a little doubt never swayed their dream of finding the Beale treasure. These enthusiasts maintained that they had no proof Beale was fake, and no proof that Beale hadn't written the letters and the ciphers, which meant to them there was reason to carry on. These enthusiasts dreamed of being the person to find the very spot in Virginia where this treasure was buried. That dream has led a lot of passionate treasure hunters to Virginia to search for answers. And many of them have done some unbelievable things in their attempts to become the person who uncovers Beale's treasure. Many Beale treasure hunters have thrown off the idea of breaking his ciphers, and they've gone straight to digging. Virginia state law says that if you find buried treasure on someone's land, you're the one who found it, so you're the one who can keep it, no matter who owns the land. There are some rather entertaining tales of attempts to unearth the treasure. One man was convinced he had found the exact place to dig, brought tools with him, and hired an armored truck so he could have it idling on a nearby road, ready and waiting to carry away his gold, silver, and jewels. But the man emerged from the woods in Bedford County, Virginia, with only disappointment and a hefty bill for renting that truck. And when you ask locals about people trying to find Beale's treasure, you'll hear many stories of property owners who used to sit outside their homes, rifles in hand, waiting to scare off the nuts who tried to come digging for treasure that may or may not exist. And you'll often hear the name Marilyn Parsons. In 1983, the Pennsylvania woman cashed a disability check and used the money to travel to Bedford County with her terrier, Muffin. She rented a backhoe to test a theory. Marilyn believed the Beale treasure was in an unmarked plot in the graveyard of a Virginia church. It's been a popular theory through the years. One man had come to town before and dug up part of a graveyard, but only found metal hangers and more disappointment. Marilyn was convinced she would find the treasure, that she knew the graveyard to dig. She figured out how to use the backhoe she rented, and by the time her digging was done, all Marilyn found was the thigh bone of someone's dearly departed loved one that had been resting peacefully in the cemetery until Marilyn started using that backhoe. Marilyn Parsons was arrested and spent 2 months in the Bedford County Jail for felonious desecration of a cemetery. There were more experienced adventurers who searched for the treasure. Mel Fisher, who famously discovered a treasure ship in 1985, hunted for the Beale treasure for 3 months in 1989. He didn't find the treasure on his first attempt, but vowed to return with a high-powered metal detector like his crew had used to find sunken ships. But Mel Fisher died before he was able to return to the Blue Ridge Mountains to try to find Beale's treasure. Despite countless failed attempts to unlock the secrets of Beale's cipher and find his treasure, the thrill of the challenge and the hunt still intrigues treasure hunters and still garners attention and exposure thanks to features over the past decade in American TV shows, including the History Channel's Brad Meltzer's Decoded and Travel Channel's Expedition Unknown. Now, if there's a modern-day treasure hunter inside of you and you find yourself intrigued by the legend of the Beale ciphers, Your fascination may just lead you to a treasure in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia. But before you throw caution to the wind, rent a backhoe to dig on someone's land in Bedford County, Virginia, heed the warning of the author of the Beale Papers. Before giving the papers to the public, I would give them a little advice acquired by bitter experience. It is to devote only such time as can be spared from your legitimate business to the task. And if you can spare no time, let the matter alone. Never, as I have done, sacrifice your own and your family's interest to what may prove an illusion. When your day's work is done and you are comfortably seated by your good fire, a short time devoted to the subject can injure no one and may bring its reward. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. You can view the Beale ciphers, see the Beale papers, and read more conspiracies and theories about Thomas Jefferson Beale in the show notes for this episode at southernmysteries.com. And if you've enjoyed listening to Southern Mysteries, I'd appreciate it if you could help other folks discover the show and help me to be able to produce more episodes. There are a few ways you can do that. If you're already subscribed, make sure you rate and review Southern Mysteries in your player. And you can also share this episode on your social media accounts so your friends know you like it and they can try it out for themselves. Another easy way to help me to continue to create Southern Mysteries is by listening in the free Radio Public app for iOS or Android. When you listen there, I get paid and the money goes directly toward the cost of hosting this podcast. The folks at Radio Public have also made it easy for you to directly support Southern Mysteries from within the app. You can tap the tip button on my podcast page and leave me a one-time tip of any amount up to $100. To those who have already done that, thank you so much for supporting Southern Mysteries. Thanks for listening.